This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Sunday Arts Magazine here on Joy 94.9. We have been off for a couple of weeks, but
one week.
It's 2 weeks in total.
Fantastic
to be with you, David Hunt, and I'm Brendan Bale.
Yes.
And we're taking over the radio again.
We are, and we've got to thank, of course,
the lovely Andy.
Andy Mack.
And joined by Steve this week again.
Yes, of course. How could I forget Andy Mack? He's so entrenched in my life at present. On Friday Drive, he's doing a bit of a roundup as well for Bent TV, which is fantastic too. So thanks, Andy. Great show as usual.
Now, this week, as every week pretty much in Melbourne, there is so much going on.
Oh, crazy stuff.
But we're going to start off with film firstly.
Yes, let's do film.
Now, I'm going to start off with one of the lesser films. I'm going to work up to the penultimate one that I saw this week. There's a bit of method to my madness, David.
Well, I hope there is, Brendan, because there is a lot of madness there.
There is a lot of madness just in the room. Now, Poltergeist.
Right.
You may remember the original.
Of course.
From the 80s.
Yes.
Directed by Tobe Hooper, produced by Steven Spielberg as well, and there were rumours that he actually directed at least some of it, maybe even all of it. Who knows? But it definitely had that sort of Spielbergian feel to it. Anywho, cut to 2015, and we've got the new film from Gil Keenan, who... One of his other films was a film called Monster House, animated for Sony. And so this is a step up to live-action film, and it's all a little bit disappointing, unfortunately. So basically, if you don't know the story, it revolves...
What's the film again?
Poltergeist.
Oh, it's a remake of
remake.
Oh, okay.
Yes, right. As they do with a lot of horror entities. They've remade it for 2015 audiences.
Yeah.
But a great cast, actually. Sam Rockwell and Rosemary DeWitt and Jared Harris as well. And Jane Addams, who doesn't get many roles, unfortunately, in Hollywood. She's a great character actress, and she's funny in this one. Now, I don't know if you don't know the story, it is about basically a haunted house. Mm. It's built on top of an old... Well, I don't know if they actually go explicitly into it this time, but an old Indian burial ground.
Right.
I think they've sanitized it a little bit this time.
Yeah.
Still an old cemetery, and it's haunted by spirits.
But which I reckon that probably could happen in a way, couldn't
it? Oh, definitely.
And well, not so much, because I'm not sure in Supernatural and all that, but just the sheer fact of the land would move still, wouldn't it?
Mm. Yeah,
because it's still... How do they dig up the bodies and move them? They don't, do they? They're just landfill.
Well, in the story...
Over the top.
So the story basically says that the bodies were moved to another more desirable area for some reason, but the people that obviously did the development didn't do that.
Right.
Still built on top of it, just paved over and moved the headstones.
Right.
So this is where, you know, the craziness comes in and there's the hauntings and all that. So as I said, the cast is great, or at least on paper they're great, but it was just very disappointing, unfortunately. It could have gone in a lot of different directions, and the fact that it was produced by a gentleman by the name of Sam Raimi, who did the Evil Dead trilogy, and it's done a lot of all the Spider-Man, the first three Spider-Man, the newer ones.
Yep.
It's just really disappointing that it was just quite bland and
right.
Meh.
Oh, what a shame, especially these days because of all the visual special effects that you expect a lot. But this is the wonderful thing about film, isn't it? You never know. And the fact is, it then gets general release, and yet it's sometimes not as good as it could or should be.
Exactly. And it's still going to make money, and
the studios will be happy. The name of it,
yeah. But it's just, unfortunately, it's another one of those remakes that kind of went awry and is in sort of the bad column rather than the good column.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the good column is quite short
yeah.
In terms of list of good remakes. But this one was, you know, it's not terrible. by any means, but not great either.
Right.
It should be a lot better.
So they're obviously not promoting it really heavily,
no,
are they?
Which is kind of another indicative.
Yeah. Because that's why I question, what's it called? It was got another name. Because I haven't seen anything about it.
No. Well, I think I caught one ad on TV at the start of the week, and I thought, oh, okay. That's right, it's out this week.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. Anywho. Anyway, moving on to something a bit more palatable. You'll probably laugh at this one, but Pitch Perfect 2, it's been out for a couple of weeks, but...
It's doing gangbusters in America.
Absolutely knocking it out of the park. And the reason I sort of really wanted to talk about it is it's actually the highest debut for a first feature director.
Right, and it's a female.
Exactly, and that's where I wanted to come in. And... I think it's fantastic that Elizabeth Banks, she's a great actress in her own right, but she's also a producer, and she produced this one as well.
Right, and
but
then she took over. Star in it as well?
Well, she has a minor role, yep. One of the commentators in it, who's very funny.
Right.
But obviously she would have stepped back a little bit with that in order to take the reins on the full picture. But I actually really liked it, and I thought it was even better than the first one, which I know a lot of people love, and it's sort of a bit of a cult film in terms of it did pretty well in the box office, but was a huge hit on DVD and all the digital platforms, which led to the sequel, essentially.
Right.
And this one is just hitting it out of the park, and obviously Rebel Wilson is doing gangbusters as well, and it's a bit more of a vehicle for her. She has a bit more to do in this one, and she's very funny.
Mm.
She's very funny, and... I just love the fact that she gets to be an Australian.
Yes.
And kind of play on that humour as well. Well, adds another dimension.
Well, I think that she can't do accents very well. That's why they just give her an Australian voice. And I think that's also a wonderful acceptance of Australia's now. And I just love the fact that Hugh Jackman, that last film that didn't do all that well for him, he had to have an Australian accent in it, and he had to relearn his Australian accent because he wasn't Aussie enough for what they wanted to be, which is quite hysterical.
Well, it's interesting, you go back to even LA Confidential, I think it's 96, with Russell Crowe and Guy Pearce, and them playing those iconic...
And Simon Burke.
And Simon Burke, that's right. All playing those sort of iconically American personalities, a sort of gruff... film noir kind of type character, and now you're in 2015 and they sort of there's a bit more freedom and a little bit more diversity in Hollywood, obviously not as good as we would hope, but I think things are coming along slowly but surely.
It's changed, I think, in the last 15 years. Hollywood has changed dramatically. I'm not liking all the huge blockbuster and Marvel Comics in particular, where they just keep on churning them out and they keep on breaking records. But there are so many other interesting films that are coming through. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of indie films. That's where it's... and I actually spoke to the guy that wrote and directed Beginners, the one that had Ewan McGregor, and I wear the badge a lot. Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer won the Academy Award for it. And he actually said, when I interviewed him, which would probably be 4 years ago, that indie films are dying in America.
It's a tough ask, but I don't know. There's still some with the digital platforms that people can create on. It sort of does democratize it a little bit, and there are things getting made, but you have to basically bankroll it yourself. Essentially, it's sort of cheaper to create it yourself. But in order to get it distributed, that's where you sort of hit a few snags.
Absolutely. Mm. And that's why it seems to be happening more in countries like Australia. And even though we're not doing many because we seem to have failed so much that it's hard to get the money. But in England, the indie film seems to still do quite well, doesn't it? And they often then become a blockbuster.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
Like Pride, for instance.
And you sort of keep the budget low and then actually spend probably more money on distributing it and promoting it and doing it that way, which, works a lot of the time. We've talked about it in terms of horror films a few weeks ago, in terms of keeping the budgets really low so you can have more sort of flexibility after it's made, if it is a good film, which is never any guarantees. But speaking of good films, have to end on this one, Mad Max Fury Road, David.
It's just getting every it's either getting 5 or 4-star reviews.
Yeah, well,
it's
somewhere between.
It's just incredible.
It's incredible film, and... speaking of feminism, basically, it is very much a feminist text, from my point of view anyway.
Yep.
And George Miller, he's a mastermind.
Well, he obviously is. Mm. Well, one, to do the first one way back in its day, and the legend now has continued. And obviously the writing he's done with bringing the women into the... They're the real warriors of it, aren't they?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say that because you sort of reintroduced to Max, the character.
He is the most cutest guy. I find him very hot.
He's quite attractive, David. but that's kind of gotten out of the way a little bit at the start, which it's important to introduce him or reintroduce him to audiences. But, you know, from that point on, you get Charlize Theron introduced, and she really is the main character.
And you just know that she's going to nail it. She's such a good actress. For such a woman that could rely just by doing cutesy films mm-hmm. because of her look, she's really ballsy. And, well, you know,
really
Monsters, she won the Academy Award for, and you hardly even recognised her, did you? Yeah.
See, in this one, she looks... It's strange because she looks glamorous, even though she's sort of this tough warrior, and I love that.
Yeah.
And I just love the fact that all of the female roles are written so beautifully, and, you know, there's depth to them, which you don't see in these big, big budget Hollywood films.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really groundbreaking. Mm. And just the film, you know, take that away, the film itself is just stunning, and editing-wise, it's beautiful. Stunts are, you know, beyond reproach, and the package is just, I don't know. Blew my socks off, basically.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I just love the fact that it's sort of brought up all these ideas of, you know, equality and stuff like that through, you know, this made-up world text about an apocalyptic...
Yep. And the special effects aren't too... And they're more real. They're not...
Well, there's no effects.
No.
It's all real.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. There's no green screen in it at all. So it would have been... I couldn't even imagine how big of a task it would have been to create these chase scenes in these huge creations. They're not even cars. They're these big sort of trucks and, I don't know, it's crazy, crazy. So basically, when it comes down to it, can't recommend it enough. Go out and see it and support Australian product. Yes, it was shot in Namibia, but it's true and true.
Well, you know, some of the Australian actors.
Yes,
there?
John Howard appears.
Yep. And the model, what's her name, the Melbourne girl? Megan.
Oh, Megan Bale. Yes. She plays a pivotal role in it as well.
Yeah. So and she's because I remember she went off to Hollywood years ago because she was going to be the new Wonder Woman. And then it fell over. It never got made. But she was going to, and then she came back and got caught up in the modeling again. But always wanted to do this. So it's fantastic for her that she's had this break.
Yeah, definitely. So go out and see it.
All right. Now, Eurovision overnight social media has just been a blitz. I won't, if you've been trying to hide it because you want to watch it tonight, I got up this morning and watched it, so I was aware of who won. But I just like this song. There are so many grand songs and all that. This was just the most simplest, beautifulest song. And it's by Johnny, as they were calling him a lot. He's from Cyprus. One Thing I Should Have Done. I just love it. It's a beautiful little regret that he didn't do more to build on a relationship. And I like his look and, you know, the black suit, white shirt, black tie, glasses, the black glasses, which is my sort of look anyway. But just a really good song. So have a listen to this. You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan Michael Bale and David John Hunt.
Tonight the rain is falling, I'm feeling cold.
Joy 94.9.
It's 18 minutes past 4 here on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine. If you want to get involved with anything that we're saying today, 0427JOY949, that's our SMS, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. What's the number, David?
Oh, the number is 1300JOY949.
Now, remember that number because coming up very soon is Radiothon.
And starting next Friday.
Exactly. And who does shows on Friday?
I might do a show. And our special guest for Radiothon this Friday.
Yes.
Is we had her on last Friday because she's got this new single, which I will play later, but Colleen Hewer, and she'll be answering the phones.
Oh, wonderful.
So if you want to ring up and join up while she's here from 5 to 6, please do so. But you can also, sign up online
Super easy online, yep. joy.org.au. Now, David,
yes.
We'll get into our first interview for the day.
And what are we talking about? It's that wonderful place down the road,
isn't it?
It's
wonderful. There's three letters.
Yes.
And we love all three of them, NGV. We're very delighted to introduce Phoebe Baby Rose and Herbert Huns. Welcome to Joy 94.9.
Hello.
Hey,
hello.
How are you?
Well, I was just going to say, you're both artists and you're from an art collective. Tell us a little bit about, I'll start with you, Phoebe, about what you do and how you became an artist to begin with.
Yeah, we are a group collective called Traumarama, and then we did like some stop motion technique animation with our video on NGV right now.
Right. So how did you start? You know, you're from Indonesia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah? Sure. So you obviously knew each other there.
Uh-huh.
Did you go to art school together, or did you meet outside of...
Yeah, we met at the art school.
Right.
Yeah, so we formed this collective on 2006.
Yes.
When we are still in the art school.
And so where did the idea come from for where you are now here in Melbourne? Was it just something you developed yourselves? Oh.
Actually, like, one curator is Kate Ryan. She invites us to make this exhibition going on. It's actually a Traumarama for kids. So this space is focusing on kids, how they experience with art. So there will be like a stop motion application that we launched yesterday in the space, and then the kids have their free time using the booth, and then they could make like their own stop motion video inside.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now you've built a house.
Yeah.
You know, how big is the house?
It's quite big.
Yeah, so it's a normal size house per se.
Not a normal size house, but it's a gallery space that we usually like. The gallery space is like a common like white box or a black box for. Yes. Showing a video, but this time we have an installation inside the gallery, and then the installation is represent like a twisted house, like a upside down house, and then like there's a courtyard inside the gallery space, yeah, like that kind of house.
And so how do the kids get involved? What do the kids do?
Inside the house, we have a dining room that it's an upside down dining room, and then on the floor there's a
dance floor.
Oh, right.
we'll have a lights, and then kids could do like a dance inside the gallery, and then in the courtyard there's a talking object. So actually, this is a technology that you press the button and then release, and then you start recording your voice, and then an object's gonna imitate your voice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the different sound. So, right. Yeah, it's really fun for seeing kids using that object.
Yeah, and Herbert, do you guys only work with children? Is that the only thing you create for, or do you do it for adults as well?
Normally, we work our work. We exhibit in a gallery.
Yep.
So it's like more to the common public, but. This is the first time we work directly for kids.
Oh, okay.
In
first time.
Yeah.
Wow.
With this big installation. This is also our first time.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So was it a real challenge for you? Was it hard, or did you have the ideas because you can be a lot freer when you're a child?
Yeah, it's become a new experience for us. But the installation is we grab from one of the scene from the video, and then we make into the installation, like into the kitchen, into the dining room, into the bathroom, into the bedroom. And then working for kids, we have to think to make like project that engage more with the kids. So that's why we built some apps working together with NGV. So
right.
Kids can experience our work as animator for making a stop motion.
Yeah.
And kids also can make their own animation.
Right. And Phoebe, since you've put the whole thing together and you've now got the kids arriving and using it, are there things now that you've gone, oh, we should have done this, or, oh, gosh, can you develop on what you've actually got there? Can you actually then make it a little bit more different?
For maybe like for the next show,
yeah.
The next plan? yeah, we could make it bigger because, like, yeah, we really want to show, we really want that show, this show is to traveling to another country maybe because, like, you know, you have, like, different reaction in maybe in our place, like Indonesia, like, we don't have this kind of exhibition that focusing on kids. Maybe we could start from there. Like, yeah, we want this exhibition to travel around country.
Right.
So what do you think is distinctly Australian about this exhibition then? What makes it different for Australian audiences? Like, what have you done differently for this one?
Yeah, this one is the first time we launched the stop motion apps. And then also, yeah, because this is really different because usually if we like showing our artwork abroad, it's only like a white box and then only like one single channel without the installation. This one is really different. And then you can touch everything. It's not like more, it's more kind of like you went into like a playground, not into the museum, because you can touch anything and then you can yell as fast as you can, you know, like something like that. So it's really free inside the museum.
And is that part of the reason you have, okay, basically there's a five fully furnished rooms, mm-hmm. a kitchen, dining room, courtyard, bedroom, bathroom. Was that sort of insanely important in having that perfect and for people to sort of interact with, as you were just saying?
Yeah, yeah, because why we chose the open house theme as our concept to make this installation, maybe because at the first time we did our works, it usually comes up in our own house. And then because it's easy to make something in your house because it's very comfortable and then you easily know the space.
Yes.
So that's why we want to encourage kids to make something in your house based on our exhibition in here.
And it's also the fact is that kids have an understanding of a house because they live in a house.
Yeah.
So it's something familiar to them, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, that's right.
And have you had fun watching the kids go inside and having fun?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just amazing see the kids when they go inside to the space and then they suddenly take the toys and then start making an animation. It's like there's no like a manual book or anything. It just go with the flow, the kids.
Yeah. And the fact is that they're a little bit more free to do it where adults wouldn't probably do it as much, would they? Their parents wouldn't play with the things as much as the kids would play with it.
Yeah, but the fun thing is the parent collaborate with their kids in the space.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So the parents can go inside with them as well.
Sure.
Right. Okay.
So it's for the parents as well then.
It's for the parents as well to have some fun. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. It sounds absolutely fascinating. And are you here the whole time the exhibition's on? Because it runs until October.
No, we left Melbourne tomorrow.
Oh, right. Oh, mm-hmm. You're in and out straight away. Now that it's off and running, and you're leaving it in the hands of the NGV.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in. So are you going back to Indonesia now after tomorrow?
Yep.
Yeah.
And what are you working on there? Have you got something that you're going to work on there?
Yeah. Actually, on 28, we're flying out to Amsterdam. We also have a show in there.
And what's that? Is that a kid's show or?
No, it's our first solo exhibition in the Stedelijk Museum.
Oh, wow. How exciting. You're doing so many wonderful things, aren't you?
Yeah. How does it feel to go from this to that, though? It's so different.
Maybe we have a really bad jet lag after this.
Well, congratulations on obviously your, people want you around the world now. So it's fantastic. So thank you so much for coming in today. It's an honour to have you in here. So thank you so much.
And we must say it is running till the 18th of October. So you've got plenty of time, but get onto it. It's going to be very popular.
Yes.
The last NGV thing similar had 85,000 people come through.
Absolutely.
So get onto it, people.
And the wonderful thing about the NGV is that they're encouraging kids to come to the gallery and they're putting more and more exhibitions on for children. Which is, that's why we love the NGV so much.
You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, joy.org.au for the world. Let me breathe.
I wanna breathe.
Joy 94.9 Sunday Arts Magazine in Melbourne. If you want to get in touch with us, 0427 Joy 949, or you can also email onair@joy.org.au. Now, David.
Yes.
David John Hunt.
Yes.
Who was that?
That was Colleen Hewitt.
Oh,
Colleen Hewitt, right. Legendary entertainer here in Australia, and she's a Melburnian. One of the original Queen of Pops when they used to have a King and Queen of Pop. And she won it, I think, 2 or 3 years in a row. She's done so much television, had number one hits. She was in Godspell, which Day by Day came from, that she had a number one hit from her. She had a number one hit with Wind Beneath My Wings, that Bette Midler had another hit years later from it. And she has done... She was in Boy from Oz. She played Peter Allen's mother in it and had one of the, would get a standing ovation every night with the song that she sang. A brilliant singer. First recording in 15 years.
Oh, 15 years.
The album's called Black and White, but that song there is called Shut Up and Let Me Breathe. And it's about domestic violence. Somebody approached her about it. She had kept it quiet for many, many, many years that she was part of domestic violence, Colleen was. And she was actually punched when she was in the stomach when she was pregnant by her partner at the time, husband, and kept it quiet because it wasn't the done thing. And somebody came to her years later, who didn't even know this, who came to her years later and said about this song. Then she put it on the album because she believed in it so strongly. And the video, if you want to check out the video of it, it's so powerful. Like the people that are on it, there's a police fireman, Molly Meldrum's in it, Eddie McGuire's in it, Stephen Curry's in it, you name it, everyone's in it because they want... John Farnham's in it because she did a TV show with him many, many years ago. Very, very powerful song. And it's wonderful that she's come out and talked about it and recorded this song.
Well, we certainly need a revolution. And I think, you know, it comes back to the fact that the arts can have a very important impact on the way, you know, society evolves.
Yep.
I feel like if we can have creative people putting this output out.
Yep.
Challenging the norms, I think it's just wonderful.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, so yes, and good on you. And she is our special guest next Friday on the Drive Show for Radiothon, and she will be taking your calls if you want to ring in and become a member. Auspicious Arts Incubator, we've actually had John Paul on it from there a couple of months back, or probably 4 or 5 months ago.
A little while, yeah. It was
now.
A great chat, though.
Yeah. Now, they're doing, it's called Artist Mojo, and what they are, it's this collective where they help you within the arts get your have a better understanding of the arts, and a lot of it's done online. They do forums as well, but they also have online forums, and they're doing one this coming Wednesday, and it's called Artist Mojo, which means have you lost your mojo? Do you need a mojo if you're going to be an artist? So it's a really important course. So you can go to Auspicious incubator.com.au/mojo to find out more about it and to register. It's a free online, and it's at 7:30 on Wednesday evening. Or you can call John Paul on 9948 4086. That's 9948 4086. Interesting one. If you're an artist and you're not sure of what direction you're going, and am I doing the right thing? Am I having an understanding of this, that, and the other? This organisation is amazing what they do on that front, and it's a free online forum for you to do it.
And reminds me, I don't know if you saw over this weekend, Robert De Niro coming out. He did like a commencement speech for graduating art students in New York.
Right.
And he basically said to them, it's been reported pretty badly in the media, but basically saying to them, you're stuffed if you're in the arts, because it's such a hard living in terms of, you know, having this creative side of yourself that you just want to, you know, really make something of.
Yep.
He was being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, you know, saying... You know, it's a bad thing, but it's also a good thing. You know, we need artists in the world.
Yep.
But was just saying that it's going to be a hard song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm. And that's why it's really nice, because you're alone out there too. You're And you might be doing the odd course or whatever, but you might have already done that, and you're a painter or you're writing, your script writer or this, that, and the other. It's really important that you actually have a support network, and this is a great way of doing it. And I'll just give you the email address, well, not the website, sorry. And so it's called Auspicious Incubator, so I'll spell it for you, AuspiciIous, and then tag on to that, incubator, so incubator.com.au/mojo, and you'll find out the information
I think you'd give Eddie Perfect a run for his money for Play School, David. Think you could take over.
oh, God, how cute is he? he's a fantastic man.
Yes, I got to speak to him the other morning, so that was fabulous.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we're going to have a really great interview very, very soon, so stick around. You're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy 94.9.
Sunday Arts Magazine, David and Brendan here with you on this Sunday afternoon. It's 4:45, but we've saved the best to last, arguably. We've got the lovely Andrew Guild in the studio again. It's been too long. Thank you for joining us, Andrew.
Thank you, Brendan.
Dave. Now, for people that may have missed our other interview with you, we want to go back and talk a little bit about your history. So, you know, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, I actually started off as a child actor in 1961. I was looking for a school holiday job and rocked up to Her Majesty's Theatre in Exhibition Street because they were looking for scruffy young boys for Oliver in 1961.
Oh, wow, Oliver.
And I got cast as the artful dodger and have been so ever since. I kept going to school. I did a fair bit of acting work at the Princess Theatre and the comedy and St Martin's and whatnot in the 60s. And then I decided to cross the line and become an exploiter instead of an exploited. So I'm a producer.
So a producer, and you know, like, so you would have seen so many changes through those days of being a child actor through to now.
Yes, I have, I suppose. And there's this awful danger in my own office where I say I remember when, which is sort of I think death to young people.
And they all roll their eyes and think, yeah, like, no, here it goes again. Yeah.
But the one thing that does remain constant is that the public can pick good entertainment. I mean, you know, everyone sits around scratching their heads, oh, why didn't this show work and why didn't that show work? Well, frankly, people didn't want to see it, and you can throw as much advertising and marketing dollars at it as you like. There are very few shows that are bad that succeed. They're usually pretty good shows, and then the marketing people, they put their hand up and say, oh, didn't we do a great job? Or the PR people put their hands up and say, oh gosh, we did a great job on this one, or the producer or whatever. But really it's the public that ends up dictating whether they want to see a show, and more so these days where in the middle of a show the word is getting out on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. People are saying, oh, don't come to this one, or you've got to see this one.
Yep.
And we see it ourselves at the box office. The great thing about this modern era is computer ticketing, from a public point of view, I believe, and also from a producer's point of view, because we can see sales instantaneously.
Right. Okay.
We can log on and see our tickets going.
Yeah, which I never thought of it having that much impact. But what happens, though, if it's already sold out?
Well, what we try to do is put on extra performances. And, in fact, we've been doing that with Swan Lake. We've even got an 11 o'clock Wednesday morning performance, and we're calling it the return of the midweek matinee. You ask us again, rolling your eyes, going back to the olden days. Midweek matinees used to be fantastic for the what we irreverently call the brew rinse set.
Yep.
But, in fact, now with shift workers and people with different sorts of jobs working from home or whatnot, people can make time, and an 11 o'clock matinee, we put it on sale about 10 days ago, it's half gone already.
Gosh.
You miss the rush hour in the morning, and you're home before the rush hour in the afternoon. Yep. I mean, it's a great time, and we are actually surprised how popular it is.
Yeah.
And we've got 6:30 shows, and we've got 12 o'clock on Sunday shows, because the audience have changed. It's not just a 2 o'clock Wednesday and a 7 o'clock at night. It can't be that anymore. You've got to sniff out what the public want and take it to them. You cannot blame the public for not coming to a show.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that, you know, because it was about October or so last year when we had you on, when it was first announced, You were only looking at doing two, maybe three shows.
You're absolutely right. We're now up to nine.
Right.
This is proving Swan Lake, and I think to an extent, going back on what I said a second ago, to an extent, it is the way we're selling it. We are letting people know it's on. You know, ballet gets a little bit sidetracked into being terribly high culture, and it can only be seen at the Arts Centre, and you have to wear your pearls to go and see it. Well, in fact, it's an entertainment. And I was looking through one of my reference books the other day, and I came up with a poster printed in a book on Anna Pavlova.
Yeah.
And the book was dedicated to Pavlova, and it was about her whole life and whatnot. And at the beginning it said that Anna Pavlova invented modern ballet. And I don't mean rolling around on the floor ballet. I mean modern classical ballet.
Yeah.
And I came across this poster in this book, and I brought you in a copy, actually. Yep. And it shows Anna Pavlova, a classical dancer with tutus and pointe shoes, the inventor of modern ballet as we currently understand it, sharing the bill with a juggler and a magician, a piano player, and it says here, an Australian entertainer. That must have been pretty exotic. And it actually says a couple of other things on this playbill sticky up on the wall bill that we actually couldn't use here today. But ballet was an entertainment, and we consider it is still an entertainment. Yes, it's got music that you can think about a little bit more than a two-minute pop song or whatever. And it's got movement which is really beautiful and it's taken years to study, like the St. Petersburg dancers or whatever. But essentially, it's an entertainment and people are entitled to go, sit back, relax, get their money's worth and leave and say, gee, I went to a really great thing and I remembered and I'm going to go back and see another one in the future.
Yep. And also, I think because would you say it's probably the most famous ballet, Swan Lake?
Look, I think so. In one way, I say to people, go and see Swan Lake because it's a great benchmark. It's an introduction to the ballet. It's not particularly hard to watch. It's very beautiful, very slow in the lakeside act, but beautifully so. And then you get an interval and you take a deep breath and you go back into the ballroom scene where it is fireworks nonstop.
Yeah.
So this ballet has absolutely everything. Plus, it's got that pure classical ballet technique. And for mothers and daughters or for young lovers or husbands and wives or whatever, it's got the tutus and the pink point shoes and all the things that you imagine ballet has. Well, Swan Lake's got it. And it's wrapped up in that Tchaikovsky music.
Exactly. I was going to say the music obviously plays a big part in it because it's Tchaikovsky. And we know it. You don't think that you're going to know the music, but you do. We all know these little tunes that are being used in television commercials or in films.
Yes, and absolutely. The Four Little Swans was used on an insurance ad not long ago, and something else was used somewhere else. But yes, it is very recognisable music.
Yeah. And it's also that thing is that if you're not really sure about ballet, it is one of those that's easy to put your foot in your toe in the water and experiment with it. You're not going to lose out because you know it is that classical.
You certainly won't be scared off
with
Swan Lake. And what may happen is that you'll say, gee, I like that. I think I'll stretch myself and I'll go and see something else. I'll go and see another ballet which may not be quite as famous. And it's a really nice ballet for a benchmark educating ballet.
And of course, Tchaikovsky being a Russian, and you're bringing the Russians to dance it as well.
Well, Tchaikovsky, of course, grew up in St. Petersburg and Moscow, spent his time between the two. Swan Lake first was staged at the Bolshoi Ballet, on the Bolshoi Theatre in Moscow, and failed in 1877.
Oh,
yes, he did.
Wow.
It was put on a shelf for a number of years. And then St. Petersburg, a year after Tchaikovsky died, St. Petersburg decided that they would put it on in the Imperial Theatre there. And it was an enormous success. It was then lengthened a little bit to fit his original score and was an even bigger success, and it has remained so ever since.
What I love about a ballet like Swan Lake is that the moves you see are the same moves that were done 100 years ago.
Essentially so. The Ivanov-Petipa choreography has remained unchanged, and I suppose that's because no one's been able to do it any better.
but isn't that the whole meaning of it as well? That, as you were saying, the four swans, that great dance they do. You're waiting for that to happen, aren't
that's
you?
That's right. That's right. I mean, there have been re-choreographed versions of Swan, like in Graham Murphy. Australia's Graham Murphy has an extremely successful one, and it has good success overseas and whatnot. But to me, personally, as a ballet purist, I like seeing Swan Lake, and I can see it time and time and time again, because it is the thing that brings me personally back to a benchmark as well. I like it for its pure classic and its history and its nostalgia and whatever.
It's like Shakespeare in a way, isn't it? How, as we said, Graham Murphy's done a modern version of it, but like Shakespeare, it's done so many twists and turns. And
back to its roots.
And of course, the blokes have now gone out and done it as well, haven't they? There's the men that do.
Yes, so that was here, recently, certainly within the last 12 months. Not for me. It didn't work for me. I thought it was more of a musical comedy than it was a ballet, and there is a bit of a fine line there. But it's one of those things that we like to do about things cultural or things entertainment. You go so that you can give your own personal view and your own personal criticism or whatever. That's why we go to theatre.
Yep.
And do you think it actually sort of strengthens the legacy of the original text anyway?
Well, it does for me. Mm. It may not for somebody else. Someone else may say, oh, I'm sick of the original. I want to move on to something new, to the Murphy or to the Matthew Bourne, which was the male Swan Lake one. It's, you know, it's whatever your taste is, I suppose.
Mm. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, as we always do with you, because
that's okay,
you're such
back.
A great talker and so many wonderful stories to tell us. So where is it? Can you still book
tickets? Well, right now we're in Cape Town, where we're completely sold out. On Monday we all go to Singapore. We've got a completely sold out season there. Then we're in Perth, and then we're coming to the plenary in Melbourne. We're opening on Friday to the 19th of June, and we're going through to Wednesday the 24th of June.
Now where's that?
The plenary. The plenary is down at what we irreverently call Jeff's Shed. There's a huge exhibition area there, but unknown to a lot of Melburnians, there is a magnificent state-of-the-art theatre right next to the new Hilton Hotel.
That's right.
Beautiful theatre, business class seats, huge stage, lovely backstage facilities.
And you've got all those restaurants out on the water
there. Restaurants, nice foyers and bars, great place to go and a perfect place. I think it's going to be a perfect place to see ballet.
Okay, so how can you book tickets?
Ticketmaster.
Thank you so much for coming in. As I said, a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Sunday Arts Magazine. It's just about time for us to get out of here, David and Brendan. But big thank you to Andrew Guild. Always a pleasure to have him coming in.
As we were saying when we were just off air then, he would be the sort of person you want to go and have a drink with or go out to dinner with. The stories he would have to tell you. We could dedicate a whole show to him. It would be fascinating.
Stories.
And the fact is that he's not just doing it in Australia. He's doing this in other countries as well, this tour of Swan Lake.
So you know, popular.
Yeah.
And big thank you to Phoebe and Herbert from Tremorama as well. That's going to do great guns at NGV. And also stick around for Robert. He's going solo today.
Solo show.
Yesterday once more. And it's going to be a very great show as usual. But stick around. We've got the news right now. Here on Joy 94.9. See you next week.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.